Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Pretty Messed Up on iHeartRadio. I'm your host, AJ McLean, with my beautiful co-host. Welcome back. We've missed you so much, Cher Bear.
I missed you guys.
It's about time you come back.
Yes,
I feel like I haven't seen you in a year.
Yeah, where have you been?
We've
literally
Hawaii.
Been waiting for you.
You know, Hawaii.
Hawaii and Maui.
Nice. Mm.
Yes, I got my Maui tan. This is an actual real tan. AJ,
you look
AJ,
great,
so that's not Dancing with the Stars spray tan.
No, but can you imagine spray tan on top of this?
Oh
tan?
No, you would.
Oh my goodness,
no, you would look like an Oompa Loompa.
You only, I love that look. You only have seen me really white, like pandemic Cheryl, and that was like borderline. I was basically see through.
I don't know. I've seen some photos of you from the past where you were
Oompa Loompa,
chocolatey brown. You were Oompa Loompa for
yeah.
sure. Like
yep,
it wasn't.
And I love it.
You really? Look great. You look
it's
great.
It's an addiction.
Cheryl.
Tanning. Thank you, Renee. I've missed you both
it
so
is.
Much.
It
is.
It is an addiction. I mean, have you not seen the Tan Mom? Like how much she tans?
Wait, is that what her name is? It, the Tan
yes,
Mom?
Yes. She's known as the Tan Mom. And like,
oh
I kid you not, she would go and do like two or three sessions a day. A
wow.
day. Mixing it with like UV tanning bed and spray tan.
Totally. It is. And it's like a layer of skin for us women, you know, like we feel skinnier. We feel like you can see our muscle tone better. It's just
you get contour with, you know, shading and stuff.
Exactly.
But
it's definitely true that you look healthier, right?
Yeah, I think so. You just feel like, I mean, I got so burnt though. I mean, it was pretty bad in my chest.
Okay, so listen. On my honeymoon, my wife and I went to Bora Bora.
I really want to go there.
And we went in January. Nobody told us that is monsoon season.
Oh.
So we're there for 11 days. For the first like 9 days, it was just rain. We never left our little bungalow. Finally, the sun comes out. She wakes me up at like 6 a.m. Babe, the sun is out. We have to go to the beach. So we go lay out for maybe hour 45. It gets overcast again. We stay out there. That night, everybody comes out of their bungalows, like Ricky Martin and his husband were there. Like, we had no idea who else was there. Mm-hmm. So we're sitting and having dinner, and my wife starts moving around, and she's getting really uncomfortable, and she looks nauseous. And I'm like, is everything okay? She goes, I don't feel good. Can we go back to our, you know, bungalow? I'm like, mm-hmm. sure. As we're walking back, she says, hey, can you take a picture of the back of my legs and, like, my, you know, butt area? So it's pitch black
burnt.
Out. I got a flash on my camera. She lifts up her dress. I kid you not, this was the color on her skin. It was like purple and blue.
Why?
She had second degree burns.
No.
She couldn't even sit down.
Because
she couldn't use the toilet.
Oh, the sun is so strong.
And we had to fly 7 hours back the next day. And to this day, we've been married coming up on 10 years. She still has a permanent tan line.
No.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. I'll never. You know, Matt also, he was like a tan whore. He was like out trying to get as much sun as possible. He's like, I don't see anything. And then cut to, he was so burnt. Like he could barely walk.
You guys are both pretty translucent people like all year round. So
I have that Filipino blood, you know, so like I can get really tan. I fell asleep once on one of the islands in the Philippines, woke up, my whole half of my face was peeling. It was pretty bad.
Well, that's like this guy over here on our boys trip that we just went out to Utah. Every time we would go out to hike or bike, we're all spraying ourselves with SPF 50.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I don't do that stuff. And yet, if you look at his arms with his shirt off,
wait, put your tank on.
With his shirt off. Oh my God.
Put your tank top on. Let me see that.
He is, he's got tan lines.
Hey, but speaking of wardrobe, let's not pretend that you didn't buy those shorts for Zaya.
Okay. So I don't know if you saw this video, but so this whole boys trip was kind of like a boys trip / bachelor party for one of our closest friends, Zaya. And I saw this video on TikTok, and I took it, and I ran with it, and I went on Amazon, and I bought these. It's a pair of, like, you know, swimming trunks.
Like lifeguard shorts.
Like lifeguard Daisy bathing suit. They disintegrate in water.
What?
So he puts them on. We all jump in the pool at our Airbnb. 2 minutes go by. He goes to get his water on the side of the pool, and he looks down and goes, oh, my God, what's happening?
What's happening?
His pants gone.
They just disintegrated.
Wait, what do you mean? Why would they do that?
As a prank.
It's a prank. So his
that
little
is amazing,
so
you guys.
He walks out of the pool with his shiny white bare ass to go put on a real bathing suit.
His face though, his face when he goes, wait, he goes, wait, what's happening?
I didn't know yeah, there was wait, such what's thing.
It is. It's
I gotta prank my husband. I'm doing that for our next vacay.
Oh, you have to. All right, listen. So we have our guest waiting in the waiting room. I'm going to do a little quick backstory real quick. Our guest today is the senior culture and events editor at Variety. He's a columnist and a podcast host of Just for Variety. He's one of Hollywood's most recognizable faces on the red carpet, an award-winning and Emmy-nominated journalist with more than two decades of experience working across broadcast, print, and digital media. Let's welcome to the show Mr. Mark Malkin. Come on in, buddy.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I love your bow tie.
Oh, thanks. Hi, Cheryl. I haven't seen you in a long time.
I know. I was just saying to the boys that we go way back when we used to do normal red carpets and be able to stand there with no mask. Yeah.
I know.
Mark, have we met? Mark, have we met before? I think
we've met. Yeah, we have a few times, I think, on a carpet or two.
Yes.
I'm actually in New York to do a carpet for Tribeca for an opening night. So.
Oh, nice.
Hold on really quickly before we dive in. Can you please let me see those amazing nails of yours right now?
That's why I'm running a little late.
Nice.
That's phenomenal. You know what? So I actually have a nail polish brand that is currently out. I am going to send you some of my polish now that I see that you're wearing some. I am definitely going to send you some.
You're definitely special. I'm still waiting for mine.
Oh, my gosh.
I was literally running around Canal Street just now because my nail polish was all chipped. I'm like, I can't do this without my nails done.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Just a little backstory. All three of us are in recovery. We are sober. We've all crashed and burned and made it out the other side. This show is basically we talk about mental health, recovery, and living life on life's terms, and hopefully by sharing our experience, strength, and hope, whether it's amongst us three or with our guests, we can help somebody out there get their life back on track. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
For those of you listening that don't know much about Mark's backstory, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself there, my friend?
Well, I was born back in the day. grew up in Queens, New York, Howard Beach, the infamous Howard Beach. Left there pretty quickly, went to school in Boston. Started my career in Boston. I'm a journalist, a reporter. I thought I was going to, you know, break the next Watergate. That was my dream. And then all of a sudden I fell into so-called celebrity journalism, entertainment journalism. In magazines, I've worked everywhere. New York Magazine, Us Weekly, New York Daily News, Entertainment Tonight, The Insider, E! News. And now I've been at Variety. It'll be 3 years at the end of July. And I love it. And I love what I do. It's my drug of choice these days. It's always been a drug of choice, just sometimes.
When we saw each other last, Mark, were you working for E? Was that it? Or
probably
was it
E. Yeah, I was at E for about 11 years.
Yes.
And that's where my sort of on-camera red carpet life began. Did not have any plans to do that, by the way. Everyone's like, oh, you want your own show? I'm like, no, I'm a reporter. I like just talking to people. So that's sort of a very quick nutshell. And now I live in LA with my husband of, I always forget. He's going to kill me every time.
Me too. It's only been 2 years.
Round up.
always round up. Nice.
Yeah, round up.
It'll be 10 years there together in August. But
wow.
Awesome.
8 years married. Thank you.
And you also have two dogs, right?
We do. We have a Paca and we have Jeb, and they're our children, I guess. Nice. So gay, but yeah.
No.
Pets are people too. Pets are people too.
I was going to say, Mark, welcome to the show. I'm Renee.
Thank you.
You're probably wondering, who is this guy? So before we dive into some more, you know, serious tones, are we the three most famous people you've ever interviewed?
At least today.
Nice.
Before you hit that red carpet.
I like that. Quick and witty.
I'm kidding.
Listen, I say this all the time, and this isn't blowing smoke up people's ass. I fall in love with everyone I interview. because I just love talking to people.
Every That's single awesome. One?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I've had a couple of...
Give us the dirt. Come on, Mark.
Names. We need names.
We need names and
maybe
addresses.
Last names, yeah. Phone numbers.
So I usually fall in love with everyone. I just love talking to people. And that's why
that's awesome.
You know, to pat myself on the back, why I think I'm good at what I do, because I don't.
Absolutely.
I'm just having a conversation.
You're curious, too. You're curious about their lives and you listen.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. That's exactly it.
Do you know, David Geffen, not to drop names, but he told me once, he said he loves learning from other people. He goes, I know everything about myself. It's other people that make the world interesting. So
that is an art form, though, by the way. Being a good listener is not easy for me, at least.
No, and what I always say about journalism, it's just an extension of school, because every day I have to become an expert in something. Yes, I cover
you have to educate yourself.
Yeah, and you have to do these deep dives on things, and I get excited by just learning.
I know it's not exactly the same, but something that I know myself and some of my bandmates have started doing is, especially when we're going to brand new cities that we've never been on tour, you know, whether it's Colombia on this most previous leg before the shutdown, doing some research about that country so that when we're on stage, we can really try to relate even more.
Yeah.
Not just through our music, but like talk about iconic places in that country or certain foods or whatever. And then the fans lose their mind if you mention like the biggest tourist spot or the underground place that like nobody knows about, but the locals, then people are like, oh my God, they really love our country. And we do, obviously we do, but it's always nice to educate yourself.
Is nice.
And it's respectful. And there's a sense of respect there. You're going to this country, you're going to this city.
Do you learn how to say hi and bye or love you?
Like, I mean the bare bones, you know, but there's certain places that we've been to for years and years, like Germany. I could speak not fluent, but I'm pretty damn good at it.
Oh, really?
But like we spent the first 2.5, almost 3 years of our career in Germany, Austria, Switzerland before we touched the US. So we kind of had to. I could speak a little bit of Japanese, you know, so AJ, just enough to get by.
AJ, have you ever said the wrong name of the wrong city?
I haven't, but Howie has multiple times, and I have no shame in saying it. We literally, we had just flown from the US into Toronto, and I think we were in Dallas last, and we were in Chicago, and like Howie gets up there, we're in Canada, and he's like, "What's up, Chicago?" And the entire place is like, "Hey, what? We're not sure. Where do you think you are, bro?"
Did they start booing?
No, they just kind of laughed, and then Howie's like, "Oh crap, my bad.
Yeah,
we're in a different country now. Yeah, come on, dude."
Okay, Mark. So I have a few questions for you. Now we're reversing. We're turning the tables here, right? I'm so used to you interviewing me. So, you know, June is Pride Month. What does Pride mean to you?
I've been asking so many LGBTQ plus celebrities that, and I haven't thought about it myself.
Oh, well, Pride. Yeah.
Yeah, you got me. What Pride means to me is owning my truth. You know, being gay isn't the only thing about me, but you know what? It's a really big thing about me. In this world, it's going to be a big thing. When you're marginalized, it's going to be a big thing. And I love living in my truth. There's nothing that makes me happier than saying my husband.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm.
You know, and I'll admit, every once in a while, I'm about to say it, I'm like, who's this person I'm talking to? Mm-hmm. I still have that. You just don't know. It doesn't happen often.
Right.
But I love saying it and the way people react to it. Mm-hmm. It'll be something like, or I have a son or I have a cousin. You know, it's all of a sudden I tell you everything.
But
Pride is about that. And it's also about honoring our past, specifically the AIDS epidemic. I have two uncles who both died of AIDS. I have HIV myself. My husband has HIV. And I always say everything that I do right now, when it comes to my reporting on HIV or AIDS or being or living in my truth, it's in honor of my uncles, because they were never allowed. They were never allowed that truth. When they died, they died of cancer. I had to ask my family what they died for. I had to say to them, they died of AIDS, didn't they? Because this was back in the earlier days of the epidemic.
Right.
You know, when gay marriage was legalized, when the Supreme Court came down with their decision, I cried. Mm. But I didn't want to get married, by the way. Wasn't married yet. And my husband was like, I don't understand. Because he wanted to get married. He said, you're crying, you're so emotional. I said, because the fact is we got to get that choice. Mm. And then something snapped one day and I asked him to marry me. And here we are almost 8 years later. And it's an honor of my uncles. They were never given that choice. And I'm living that life that they weren't allowed to. Literally, we're not allowed to.
It's about equality, isn't it? You know, yeah. I've always been, like AJ and everybody here, a proponent of equality, right? Proponent of equality. I ended up co-writing 37 songs with Janet Jackson, and a lot of our focus was about, we wrote songs specifically for the gay community, a place called, one song was called Free Zone. And for me, it's anytime I see people being oppressed, right? No matter what the stripe is, I feel that, I feel it in my gut. You know, I feel that like when people aren't treated like human beings, I feel in my gut, and I'm so proud. I'm just going to brag on my daughter for a second. She's 9 years old. She's an artist. And she sent me this, and it was for Pride Month right here.
Oh wow. That's nine.
That's
she's
amazing.
Nine.
She's 9 years old, you guys. And
wow.
She posted it on her Instagram. She never shows her face on Instagram, but she posted it as Sassy Swan is who she's on as.
I'm going to start following her.
And she hashtagged all the LGBTQ, and she wrote such a beautiful thing. I didn't even know. She sent me the photo, but I went on her Instagram and I read what she wrote, and she's talking about one love and everyone should be treated equally. And I was like, oh my God. So I wanted to mention that because I feel that it's our responsibility to help shape the minds of the young ones to be open-minded, to be tolerant, you know?
Yeah.
And so I needed to throw that in there. I know AJ's
that's awesome. I mean, literally, it's funny that you show that, because I was laying down on the couch this morning and Lyric, who's my youngest daughter, she's four, she walks in from my garage with a rainbow flag umbrella that I have, and she walks in and just casually walks by and goes, I support Pride Month, Dad, and then walks away. And I'm like, wait, what? That's awesome. Wait, hold on. But
that is
but you're absolutely right, Renee. It does start with, you know, at home, as, you know, parents, being able to explain to our kids that everybody is equal. I have two of my best gay friends that I got ordained to marry. As soon as they passed the bill, they asked me if I would marry them, and I said, hell yeah. You know, and I'm still ordained, but all my friends, no, I'm not going to marry you. That was a one-time thing. But it's interesting because my oldest daughter, she's eight. She just asked my wife and I to kind of explain to her about her gunkles, you know, explain this to me. And my wife and I, we sat down and we kind of explained to her as best we could what it means to be gay in our understanding. And then I said, you know what? Next time Mark and Tom are over here, why don't you ask them, baby? They'll be completely honest with you and they'll be completely vulnerable with you. Ask them. So she's like, I can't wait to ask them. So she's excited. But, you know, it's just interesting.
When I hear this, you're showing me a picture of 9 year old. When you said Lyric is four?
Yes.
That blows my mind. That absolutely, I don't know. You know, my husband is from Mexico.
Yeah.
And That's a whole other story about his immigration and so on and so forth. But he finally gets reunited with his family after not seeing them for 15 years. Wow. So he's coming back to Mexico with the white Jewish boyfriend from Queens. And I'm like, what are they going to think? We get to the airport and they have signs up that say, "We love you, T.O. Mark."
Oh, I just got chills.
Makes me want to cry.
And we know this is a very Catholic country. My mother-in-law is very Catholic, but loves me and I love her. But I was so nervous, and to see that, it's not even a thought with them. It's like, that's Tio Fabian's esposo.
Why can't it be?
Yeah. So it's to hear that your kids are so, it's not, the word's not even open, because it's like, do they even know what it's like to be closed?
Right.
Yeah. Well,
they're just being.
My daughter is aware of the oppression. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. We do discuss it. We do discuss the unfairness of inequality. And for her, she just took it upon herself to just tell, like she wrote on Instagram, it's the best month ever, Pride Month, the best month ever. You know, and it's like, I just felt really, really proud myself.
Well, that just says a lot about the both of you, you know, how you raise your kids. So
thank you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people know that you know, I've been a huge advocate for the LGBTQ plus community for decades. You know, and I will continue to be. And you know, with this new solo project that I'm working on, my first single, Love Song Love, you know, I just want to continue to spread love, equality, acceptance, and educate people, because lot of the, which I'm sure that you know, Mark, and you've felt, a lot of the oppression and the judgment comes from fear. All of that comes from fear and not understanding. And look, okay, if you don't understand it or you don't get it, you don't have to. It's not your place. So zip the lip, move on. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's instead of going against the grain and... Yeah. You know, and I'm excited that it's Pride Month finally. Some of my bandmates and Lance from NSYNC and Joey, we are putting together a event for Pride Month coming up in the next couple
weeks.
That's
awesome.
So there's a lot of, I'm over the moon about Pride. You know, I just want to go back to something, Mark, because I'm just curious. Do you feel like, being HIV positive, do you feel like there is a stigma amongst the community now, or do you think it's kind of lessened over the years? I mean,
you know, it's a tough one, because one thing, I'm HIV positive in the recovery community.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the stigma is not there. I mean, it was the recovery community that, you know, really came together during the epidemic, especially in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Especially in Los Angeles. So it's, I've never felt the stigma. I will say that when I was diagnosed because I was active in my addiction. I seroconverted, which means you become HIV positive, when I was in my addiction. So in this weird way, not a weird way, but God, I haven't even thought about this either. Thanks for the question. I haven't, my husband and I, we got together, we were only 60 days sober each. I had a few days more than him. I eventually had a couple of relapses, so he has more time. We just celebrated 10 years on
You're Saturday. Both sober? Wow. That's awesome.
Congratulations to the both of you. That's awesome. Yeah.
There were people who said, oh, you'll never last. You only have 60 days. It's not in the book. Anyway.
It's true. It's not.
You know, and like I said, I had two relapses during the relationship, which was not easy. And it's the worst thing I've ever done. But that said, he's HIV positive. I'm HIV positive. We got together. There's no stigma.
Yeah.
So I haven't, in this strange way, I haven't been in like the dating world as someone who's HIV positive. I know it's still out there. I know that it's not, so, the stigma's there, but also what's there is like, people just don't know.
Or do they not want to talk about it?
I don't know if it's not that they don't want to talk about it, or it's just literally they don't think it's a problem anymore.
Got it.
Well, you know, it's so crazy because there was so many years, you know, where that's all you heard on the news. That's all that was talked about. And then it just kind of went to the wayside.
Well,
and it's almost like you don't hear it talked about enough anymore because it's like, look, it's still there.
And then we have COVID, right?
Right. But what happened there is the advancement in drugs. So it's a so-called manageable disease. Do I still have HIV? Yes. Is it undetectable? Yes. Undetectable means my viral load is so low, tests won't detect it, nor can I transmit it during sex.
Got it.
So these drugs came along and everyone, men stopped dying.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It was a death sentence. I remember when it was an absolute death sentence. If somebody got HIV, that just meant the clock just started that they're going to die.
But we don't necessarily hear the positive of the, like what you just said, you know, with people just taking the drug or taking whatever they needed to take.
But the issue now is what's happening is, and it's like any healthcare, it's access to the treatment, it's access to preventative. But I just did a story in Variety, our most recent issue was our Pride issue that we do every year. And I have my column there called Just Variety. And it's usually like, you know, industry insiders and different items about them. But this time I dedicated the whole column to a man named Jeffrey Drew, who's a casting director here in LA. And he's part of an experimental cure trial.
Wow.
And he's been HIV positive for 34 years. He went through this treatment. And in the last 6 months, he's taken no meds for his HIV. And he's undetectable.
Wow.
He can't technically say he's cured, but we're getting there.
But there's an advancement, though. I mean,
there's an advancement. And I was just literally before this podcast, I was on the phone with the CEO of AMFAR, who's the American Foundation for AIDS Research, and they're bringing back their live events at CAM this year. And I said, what is the focus now? He said, we are laser focused on finding a cure.
That's great.
And it's there. It's around the corner.
And it's important that we talk about this, you know, because not a lot of people know. And it's great that you write that column. You also have a podcast as well. Do you mainly interview more? Is that more on the celebrity side or is that also
more the celebrity side? Sort of the fun, you know, someone has
what is it called,
release.
Mark?
Just the Variety. It was Got the it. Big ticket, but we rebranded it Just the Variety back in December.
So I kind of want to shift gears really quick and just kind of go back to, because I'm curious as to what, well, first, again, congratulations on being sober.
Yes,
both you and your husband. That's phenomenal. When and why do you think did your addiction start? Was it like, would you say a lot of it was because of schedule and your job and the access to it? Or was it even before that?
So, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, when I say I'm an addict and I'm in recovery, I was living some sort of rock and roll life because of what I did.
Right.
Mine was, I got drunk at events. That happened. But my heart, I was a crystal meth addict, which I call, you know, it's the devil. Crystal meth is the devil.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened was, you know, this is going on almost 20 years ago. My dad was dying. I was working really hard. I was in New York. And I said, on the weekends, I'm getting loaded. Mm-hmm. I deserve to get loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Not realizing what I was saying was I just didn't want to deal with everything that was going on.
Sure.
Right.
Bunch of more family problems happened. I deserve to get loaded. I worked really hard. I deserve to get loaded. So for the weekends, I would disappear. My friends would have no idea where I was. And, you know, so why did it start?
Or was that your rock bottom?
No. My rock bottom was being diagnosed with HIV.
Right.
You know, and that was about 15 years ago.
Okay.
But still didn't stop. Still went on a couple more years, a few more years. Mm-hmm. I'll be sober 8 years on July 7th.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. So, you know, I had many rock bottoms. Was I homeless? Did I go to jail? No. Did I overdose? Oh, yeah. But it was so, mine was so secretive. My friends, yeah. My closest friends had, they knew I partied.
Right.
But they had no idea that it was an addiction until I went to them and said, don't let me do cocaine anymore.
Right.
that was, you know, and yeah, I wasn't doing cocaine anymore, but I was doing crystal meth, but they didn't know about that part.
Did
you ever go to the red carpet? Like, did you ever, were you using while you were working?
No, coming down, yes.
Got it.
Which is probably almost worse. I mean, depending
and this
on,
is probably, you know. This is the first time I'm going to admit something publicly, which I've not talked about ever.
Only if you feel comfortable.
Yeah, no, I do. I was really messed up on live TV a bunch. Years before E.
Got it.
But I would do some live TV hits, and I was, and the only people who would know something was up was the makeup artist.
Right.
Mm. They're like, your
they're
skin,
very intimate
really
with
dry.
You.
Well,
yeah.
You know,
they know
see
everything.
Skin.
They can see right through you. When we shot the video for our song, The Call, was the first time I tried cocaine, and it was a night shoot. So our call time was 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, and I had never touched the stuff. So I did it in my hotel room. I get on set and it like hits me, and I'm like, woohoo, here we go. And literally I'm in the makeup chair and I'm just like, talking really fast and I'm jittery. And the makeup guy, his name was Scott, and he's like, dude, are you okay? And I'm like, I just tried freaking blow for the first time. He's like, okay, first of all, dial it down. Let's not talk about this so loudly. And I did tell one of my bandmates' wife who was on set, and she was really gracious enough to not tell the boys. But yeah, I mean, like, you know,
so you told people as you did it for the first time.
I told people, yeah, as I did it for the first time. And then, you know, same thing, like you said, you never necessarily were in full party mode, like while you were working. I swore to myself I would never be drunk on stage. And it's now happened 3 times.
You know, what's funny, AJ, is when we are high, we think people don't know we're high. Like
exactly.
I know, like AJ would call me from some country talking at 2 in the morning, talking a million miles an hour. Jim Carrey and I are spirit animals, and I've got an idea for this and that, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, whoa, bro, whoa.
And I
would say, are you okay? And he's like, no, I'm fine. I'm just having a bunch of ideas.
Been talking so fast.
I mean, we could laugh about it now.
Yeah,
it's obviously totally. That's not funny, yes. But
especially
yes.
Crystal meth is not a joke. And I have friends that are in recovery from crystal meth. One of them is gay, and there. I'm not saying, I don't want to say, but it is a thing in the gay community.
Oh, right? I call it the second epidemic.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Cheryl, you asked me if people don't want to talk about HIV, they don't want to talk about crystal meth.
Oh no, yeah, absolutely not. Yes,
you know, and you know, I went public with my recovery and my HIV status sort of all at the same time. I had there's a big bike ride from San Francisco to Los Angeles called the AIDS ride. AIDS life cycle, and raises money for the LGBT Center and the San Francisco AIDS Foundation. My husband had done it a bunch of times, and I did it. And I came home, he came home, and I turned to him and I said, I think I'm just gonna tell the world. It's time.
Wow.
And I went on Instagram and I said, I'm HIV positive, you know, crystal meth was a problem for me. My party.
You just said it all.
You know, and there were headlines that came out of it because, as Cheryl said, you know, I was at E! News, so it was like red carpet correspondent.
Everyone knows Mark
positive.
Malcolm. Yeah.
But the one thing that no one picked up on was I also said I was a crystal meth addict.
Wow.
The HIV was the big headline. The crystal meth sort of got.
Right. Kind of
and that was
aside.
The one that I was most nervous about.
Interesting.
Now,
and what made you not want to tell your story prior to that?
Career.
Yeah.
I was scared.
Makes sense.
And I needed sobriety under me. I didn't want people watching me going, oh, look, he just tripped. Is he drunk?
Right.
If I could come out and say, hey, this was, you know, what I was 4 or 5 years sober, then I could say, I have 5 years sober.
Mm-hmm.
you know.
And how did you feel when you finally said that?
I just got chills asking me that, because that was, this is me, guys.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
there's right? no secrets. There's no bullshit. There's
kimono open.
Yeah, you gotta pull back the layers.
Literally, like.
I just got chills now too. Yeah, you know. No, I know.
But as we know in LA, it's such a huge sober community. I mean, the recovering community. And, you know.
There's also the dark side, though.
Yeah, no, there is. And
there's always going to be that, though. There's always going to be that. I mean, how do you feel now? Like, you know, I will hopefully, no frontsies like Renee tells me. But on the 8th, I will have a year and a half sober.
Yeah.
And, you know, God willing, I get there. But, you know, I was just in Vegas this past couple of days for a charity event. And it's my first time back in Vegas since I've been sober. And I got out unscathed. But it doesn't mean that my brain wasn't a little racy when I first got there, because I was anxious.
Right. And it was a trigger, maybe.
And it's a little bit of a trigger. But, like, you know, I stayed in contact with Renee. I talked to my wife. I didn't. You know, go
disappear.
I didn't disappear and not call somebody back like I normally do. I didn't call Renee 1,000 miles a minute. Da, 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 da. So my question to you, Mark, is like, do you feel any stress even now, like doing any kind of red carpet events, doing any after party events, being around, you know, that scene today?
What's a trigger, really?
Does that bother you, or
you know what? It doesn't, because I love my clear mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I will say, when I was going to the, I came to New York, I'm in New York right now, and I got to LAX, it's 10 in the morning. My flight was at 10, so it must've been like 9:30. I'm at this bar restaurant just ordering a breakfast burrito, and someone ordered a Bloody Mary. Mm,
that was me. Not recently, but that used to be me.
But do you know that in my head for a second I went, God, that would taste so good right now.
Right, of course.
Yeah. You know, but
it's funny how the universe just tests, right?
Yeah, you know, but also I think it's a test, and the universe likes to remind you of, like, no, you don't.
How strong you are. Yeah, you know? Mark, how resilient. I like that.
Mark, I like how you said you love your clear mind. That's the thing I try to tell people, especially in early sobriety, still aren't comfortable in their own skin. And you start to love what you are, who you are, where you're at, that the idea of escape is no longer something you want to do. That said, of course, Vegas, right? Like, we dropped AJ off on the way back from Zion. And Vegas is like, whatever you see here stays here, right? It's all designed to escape your reality.
Yes.
I don't like being in Vegas. I don't like the bright lights, the bells, the whistles. It's sex, gambling, dead, everything.
Cigarettes.
Smoke. I just don't like being there anymore.
It just reminds me of just constantly being wasted. Just 24/7.
I used to love that.
I know people who are gambling addicts. Mm-hmm. So when I see Vegas,
it was a different perspective for me this time, because just seeing people, whether it's people that were there with me, part of my crew, after the show, not getting loaded but still drinking like immediately as soon as the show was over, or seeing people like at, you know, noon or 11 in the morning when I went down to get a coffee, and they've got one of those long giant
doing the walk of shame,
and I'm just like. You know, at first,
barefoot,
I'm like, yeah, that was me. That was fun.
Hands.
But then I'm like, man, I don't miss that anymore.
I'm proud of you, AJ.
I know.
That's great.
Because now I know exactly what the outcome will be.
Mm-hmm. Where before,
I would test it, because I would test my wife. I would test my friends. I would say, oh, my wife's going to stay with me. My friends are going to be cool. It's fine. But that's not the reality. The reality is, my wife would finally turn to me and say, I'm done. I would lose my children. I would lose everything that matters most to me.
But,
and that's just not worth it.
But mainly, AJ, you did that for yourself. I mean, you must feel really good and proud of yourself. I'm proud of you.
I am. I'm exhausted, but I'm exhausted from this past week.
Exactly.
I have never, myself and Renee have never done the level of hiking that we did in Zion ever in our life.
So you got to wear them out. Right?
But the fact is you could do that sober.
Yeah,
like,
no, that's
before you go there. What I love to say, and this goes back to the clear minded thing, but I always say, the thing that I love about being sober the most is I can breathe.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I wake up in the morning breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's feeling. It's
Do you know what I compare being in Vegas sober to? It's like being at the strip club when the lights come on.
Or the clubs in general. That's the worst.
It's so depressing. You see all the stains, you see like all the depression, all the anxiety. All the toxicity, right?
Yeah.
When I go through Vegas, back when I was still getting high, Vegas was the perfect way to disappear and not feel guilty about being an addict. It's like you just go hard and hard and hard. Now it's like, I can't wait to get out of here. I cannot wait to be gone from here.
It also helps to see that though. Like, cause I'm like, gosh, that used to be me. And I'm so happy that I feel great actually right now.
Plus, you
know? there is something to be said about going to Vegas and walking away from Vegas with all your money in your pocket.
Yep.
Not dehydrated, mm-hmm. not a headache, and just going home and be like,
To be clear, I've never been in a strip club when the lights came on.
I can't say the same, guys. I've never been to a strip club.
My father owns strip clubs, so I've seen all different types of lighting.
So Mark, you and I have something in common, being chronic relapsers. I could put together, you know, back when I got sober the first time, July 9th, 2001. I was just shy of 7 years when I went out and stayed out, and I had been out up until literally this last almost 18 months, on again, off again. I could put together 4 months, I think, was the most I put together, and then I go right back out again. Yeah. Why do you think relapse was such a thing for you? Like, why do you think that was a thing?
Because I kept it a secret.
Yes.
You know, but yeah. I used to in my head say, I wish my friends knew and they would do an intervention. I would watch intervention shows and be jealous, which is such a demented addict way of thinking. A normal person would say, okay, if you feel that way, why don't you ask your friends for help?
But do you think maybe you weren't ready and you just didn't want to hold yourself accountable?
I think so. I think I was so fearful about my career.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and I would say to people, like, how can I go to rehab?
Right.
But like, who, how, and this is, you know, we know this, you know, recovery has become much more accepted with just in the last couple of years or so.
Yeah, very recent.
So this is, you know, I move out to LA. So what happened was, I'm in New York, my career's going great. Entertainment Tonight comes to me and says, hey, we want to move you to LA to help start this new show called The Insider. You want to come to LA? I said, yeah. So I'm pulling a geographic, not knowing what a geographic was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, I'm not going to use when I get to LA. Mm. I'm going to start fresh. Well, you know, that lasted for one weekend.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was so in my career, there was no way. And then, you know, I worked at Entertainment Tonight when all the Pat O'Brien stuff happened, if you remember that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there trying to get recovered and all of this. He's going on Dr. Phil to talk about having 30 days. And I'm getting pissed. Like, what are you putting him on TV for? He only has 30 days. But I'm trying to get recovery. And basically what happened was I had a therapist and a sponsor say to me, you need to stand up as a newcomer.
Mm.
You need to take a newcomer chip every single time. Because if you don't, even if you're in the rooms, the secret's still there because no one knows your story.
Right.
Yep.
And I started standing up.
There's a saying, seek humility or it will find you. And when it finds you, it's never pretty. And I agree with that. When I had 14 years, Mark, and I started playing poker. And my sponsor said, careful. There's reasons why they have Gamblers Anonymous. Oh, don't worry about me. Don't worry about me. I go to meetings every day, blah, blah. And it took me down. And I eventually relapsed on pills. I've got 7 years back, But I have to tell you that for me, I learned a lot, and that is, don't move away from the program.
Yeah.
That was for me. Yeah. Like,
that's, you know, listen, my husband and I, you know, we're very like settled in our lives, and we're not, you know, especially during COVID, we're not doing meetings very often. I was doing meetings when people asked me to speak, you know, that's mm-hmm. the truth.
Yeah.
You know, to be in a relationship with someone who's sober, you know, is, it's like, it's not even, it's so funny that, you know, this is Hollywood, right? So what happens? I get sent a lot of swag and gift bags.
With
what's
alcohol
in every gift? All alcohol. We bottles. Literally have bags of alcohol.
I have
sitting in apartment.
Gift bags. Yeah. I just give right. away for Christmas.
I give it to my neighbors. Fabian works at a hair salon. He gives anybody. It to people he works with. And I said to Fabian, I said, God, can you imagine if we were active in our alcoholism? This would be so great. He's like, no, it wouldn't be, because right. there would be no alcohol there. We'd,
that's
we
right.
We would have had a,
yeah, because you would burn through it. Yeah.
We'd burn
yeah.
through
oh,
it.
Easily.
So the I guess the point of what I'm saying is, you know, no, Fabian's not my higher power. He's not a meeting, mm-hmm. but there is something to be said about
there's a language.
There's a language, and there's, you know, I think it was last year on my sober birthday, I think I put something on Instagram of like, you know, I'm celebrating 7 years, blah, blah, blah. The greatest thing I've ever done in my life is getting sober. Mm-hmm. Fabian, that's my husband, calls me. He's like, that's the best thing that ever happened to you. And I said, babe, if I didn't get sober, I wouldn't have you.
That is true.
That's 100% true.
You know, I can't say you're the best thing that happened to me, because you would not have
that kids. Right.
And absolutely. He gets it, and he understands it.
You know, that's you're right, Mark. Like, you know, when I got sober, all my groups of friends changed completely.
Yeah.
Everything changed. Like, honestly, from, you know, my lifestyle to I'm now married to everything has just changed. And, you know, there is this saying that you are who you hang out with. And it's interesting to actually see your life now versus the way it was. Everyone has changed as far as my friends go.
Yeah, you know, like I said, with my life, it was very, it was so separate. It was so separate. So like, yeah. I didn't have drug friends.
Right.
I was one and done.
No one knew. Right.
If yeah. I partied with you, I'm only partying with you once. There right. are some repeats here and there, but like, I know this is going to sound crazy. I never had a drug dealer. Mm. Mm-hmm. I'm such a neurotic, worrisome Jew from New York. And I thought if I had a drug dealer, I'd get arrested. Oh, so I yeah. always managed.
So you were very
we're addicts.
Right.
What are we? We're addicts.
We're very resourceful.
Someone else?
Very resourceful.
Get me drugs. Like right. I would have friends, like when we would do cocaine in New York, they'd be like, Mark, your turn with the drug addict. I'm like, then we're not doing coke tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Would you do it by tonight. Yourself? Would you be doing, or was it more within like a group of people?
More within just this dark this crystal meth underground. That's what I call it. It's an underground.
So Mark, I have, I mean, look, we could keep talking and I know. Talking, but
I can talk to you for
we only
hours.
Have time. We only have time for one more quick question. Sure. And I just want to ask, because you're a public figure, because a lot of people, I'm sure, not only in the LGBTQ plus community, but outside of that community, look up to you. What advice do you have for anyone that's, you know, struggling out there? Doesn't matter if they're in the business or not, if they're afraid to come clean about having a problem, what is your advice? What can you say to maybe give them some hope?
I say, get to a meeting, get to a meeting. That doesn't mean, and it doesn't mean it's going to turn around like that. You know, I wanted that quick solution. I wanted, okay, I'm going to go to the meeting. I'm going to get 30 days. I'm going to get 90 days. I'm going to be Mr. Gung-ho program 12-stepper. You know how it is.
Yeah.
Patience. Yeah. Patience. And don't let anyone, as much as we sit here and say it's the best thing that ever happened to me, I couldn't have anything without it. That doesn't mean I don't have my hard days.
Of course.
But that doesn't mean I don't have insecurity. You know,
absolutely.
This year, COVID has been tough. I lost my brother unexpectedly. So not COVID, not drugs, probably an untreated alcoholic. But the difference is I'm dealing with it. Mm-hmm. And I know it might sound weird to someone who's scared to deal with their problems. Mm-hmm. There's nothing better than dealing with it sober.
That's
and
right.
Also, knowing that when you're dealing with, how do I phrase this? This is probably a little too in the weeds, but I could be hot-headed. I'm a New Yorker. Mm-hmm. So I could really, you know, if customer service isn't treating me right, I could, you know, that whole thing.
Well, I'm the same way. I'm from the Bay Area. Right. So.
But then once I do it now, being sober, I'm like, I'm sorry I just treated you.
Yes, yes.
You make amends, yeah.
Yes. You make amends. And you're not even realizing you're making amends. You're not saying even in your head, I'm making amends, but you knew something
was
wrong.
You're conscious, yeah.
And there's something good about consciously knowing when you're wrong.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mark,
and that helps.
Mark, I have to say that when I found out you were coming on and when I found out that you're sober, instantly my shoulders drop and I go, oh, kinship, we can just talk forever. Yeah. I know we can talk forever. I could be out and about different parts and someone mentioned, I hear them say something that we know, right?
Yeah.
That we know they're friends of Bill and we're like, oh man, I want to just talk to this person.
Yeah.
There's that beautiful energy, right? The language. My wife's in recovery as well through Al-Anon, and her and I can sort through our stuff now, right? It doesn't have to turn into such a big deal because we're not communicating. Now it's like, you're when you said this, it hurt my feelings. Oh, sweetheart, I'm sorry. I'm glad you told me. Thank you for telling. You know what I mean? It's just a whole different thing. So I'm glad that you in recovery and with, you know, HIV, I lost two brothers in recovery. And I swear the program carried me through all of that. My higher power, my friends in the program, they carried me through. So it's so nice for me to see you and your enthusiasm for the program. Yeah. Like that's and contagious. Mark, it's contagious.
Absolutely. And Mark, it's so nice. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Cheryl. Go ahead.
It's so nice to cross paths with you again, you know, and just to see, you know, you met me too in my crazy days, in my party days. And it's nice to see, you know, that the both of us have, you know, switched to the other side. And it's,
I look forward to seeing you again, Mark, too, myself, face to face. And now knowing we can give ourselves a little nod and go, how you doing? You good? Are you good? Yeah.
Yes. The one thing I just wanted to add, I know you guys have to wrap it up. I just want to add, AJ, you were asking about advice. The other advice that I say to newcomers or someone who's struggling, play out the tape.
Yes, play the tape through.
Right now you want to have a drink? Okay, have a drink. Now just think about what's going to happen at the end of that tape. Mm. And that gets me, that has saved me because that takes me through regular life, not even just drinking and drugging.
It's like, do you miss suicidal depression? Have a margarita.
But it never stops at just one, you know, never stops.
Never. No. It doesn't. No. That's the thing. So.
Thank you.
Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was awesome. Today.
You're always welcome back and stay safe out there. Happy Pride Month. This is going to be a great month. And all the best to you and your husband, and hopefully we'll get to see you face to face, and your children, your four-legged children.
It's great to see you, Mark. Thank you.
Take care,
buddy. Bye-bye. Thank you, Mark. Bye. Cheers.
It's crazy because I think I knew him when he was still maybe using, you know, and so like, and same with me, and so it's just crazy to see the other side, right? So I think it was 2006 when I came to Los Angeles. So I remember Mark definitely throughout like the beginning part of my time here in Los Angeles.
See, I don't think I ever met you when you were active, and I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of glad I didn't meet you when you were active, but now I have nothing to compare it to. Like, I've only known you sober, and you're from what you've told me while we were on the show to even on this show to just having conversations, like, you've come a long way, and it's nice to see that now.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't even picture you
way.
Just
you
like
know,
I can't picture Renee that way either. I've known Renee 20 years. Yeah. I can't picture him even remotely high on anything.
It's so crazy. I'm going through old pictures because, like, we were shooting something, anyway, like pilot, and they need old pictures of me when I was wasted and, like, when my hair was sweaty and I was partying. And it, I have to say, look, I definitely, when you guys talk about, like, having that thought, right, like you in Vegas, when I was in Hawaii, I, for the first time, I thought about possibly drinking. And it was really scary for me because I think what triggered it, I'm not saying like what he did was bad, but my husband had a glass of champagne or whatever. And my senses, I don't know about you guys, but have come back and so strong, right? So I can smell it from a mile away. Mm-hmm. And it definitely triggered something in me. And it was interesting because I was just, I think right away I felt shame, right? Over that thought. And I didn't.
And look, and it's normal, Cheryl. I felt a sense of
like weakness, right? I felt no, like, Cheryl. Oh my God.
It we should talk a little bit about that. It's we're addicts, right? It'd be weird if we never even
but
for
I never
a moment.
Did.
No, I know, but it's going to happen. You're in paradise, mm-hmm. right? People are having their little drinks, and no one's bursting into flames, and the temperature's perfect. Everything's awesome. Mm-hmm. What would be so wrong?
That's, you get free bottle, like it's a happy anniversary, bottles of champagne being delivered to our room.
And,
yeah.
But it's normal. It's normal.
Okay.
I wanted to say that, like, having Mark on right now really, really made me feel so proud to be sober, mm-hmm. seeing his enthusiasm. And I wanted to say to any of our listeners that are struggling that sobriety, like Mark said, it's the absolute greatest thing that's ever happened to me. Like you guys, I've had a lot of experiences meeting kings and queens and sultans and whatnot, but I swear to you, the greatest feeling in the world is feeling okay no matter where you are, no matter around whoever you're with, under any sky, with any tribe, to feel comfortable in your own skin. Mm-hmm. That's the greatest thing. Now, if you're not struggling in your life, then keep doing what you're doing. But if you are struggling with drugs or alcohol or other disorders or addictions, give this thing a go, man. It's the most beautiful thing. Yes. I'm watching AJ bloom, like literally bloom, having him go to Vegas. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, God, people even ask me, just so you know, AJ, is AJ going to be okay in Vegas? And I said,
how are
to
you
them,
feeling, Renee?
How am I feeling about...
How were you feeling during when
he... Well, it's... Last time he was in Vegas, it didn't go well. You know, there's been a few times in Vegas. And I'm a realist. Vegas is an Achilles heel for a lot of drug addicts and alcoholics. It not only promotes... not only does it not talk, you know, against all these seven deadly sins, it encourages you to just let loose. And when you see everybody in this, like I said to Mark a second ago, positivity's contagious, negativity's contagious. And also when you're in a sea of people, they're all smoking, they're all drinking, they're all doing all this stuff, they're gambling, all this, you have to be on solid ground. And so, yeah, in the back of my mind, I was like, I hope AJ will be okay, because I've gone out to Vegas a few times to kind of like help him like get out of the hole he had gotten himself into. But I also felt confident. You know, we just spent five amazing days doing stuff naturally. We're mountain biking, we're hiking through water.
There must have been like a high with that too.
It was a spiritual experience.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yes, like, I agree. And so I felt like, you know what? I feel like AJ's really starting to taste what it's like to not want to escape his own life, that I felt almost 99.9% sure that he wasn't going to say, oh, like in the old days, you know what? I'll drink tonight and then I won't drink tomorrow. And by the time I get home, blah, blah, all that addict mentality. Yeah. I felt really confident that he wasn't going to... relapse there. It doesn't mean we don't stay vigilant.
Totally.
We have to continue what we're doing. Or like if he wasn't going to as many meetings and us talking recovery and doing the work, doing the steps, and then he went to Vegas, I would not be 99.9% sure.
Yeah. I also wonder if I had this trigger of drinking again because I didn't, like, it sounds weird, but because I wasn't a part of the podcast for a week, like I think in a way this has been kind of my
rock. Test, like you said, like a universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's normal. You need to know. It's very normal for anyone in recovery to like at least raise an eyebrow and go, would it be so bad right now? Would it be that bad?
It is normal.
Yeah,
it's a longer discussion, though, conversation.
Like Mark said, you just got to play it through. Have you ever been able to have one and leave it at one?
No.
Yeah.
My truth is no. That's just the beginning.
I'm
literally just pulling the pin off the hand grenade. That's it. That's all I'm doing. The one drink is pulling the pin. I'm going to blow up. Might not be immediately, but I'm going to blow up.
But at some point, yes. All right, you guys, listen, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to answer one of your emails and wrap things up. So stay tuned. All right, you guys. So we are back here on iHeartRadio, Pretty Messed Up. So we always ask you guys, our listeners, to send us emails, questions, and whatnot. And we have one today from Rebecca, who asks, I adopted my two nephews because of substance abuse by their parents. Their dad's been clean going on 9 years now and is running his own business. So he sees them every other weekend. Mom, on the other hand, has done nothing to get clean. I've told her to be clean at least 6 months and be in therapy for her issues, and I would let her see them. In your opinion, am I going about this in the right way? She hasn't seen her boys in 9 years now, and the oldest is 14 and wants to see her. Do you think he will resent me for this decision, even though she is very unstable?
Oh, good question.
That is a good question, Rebecca.
That's a heavy question.
I think, look, is there a right or wrong answer on what you're doing to protect your nephews? I don't think there is. I think what you're doing out of love. Mm-hmm. I think you're doing out of concern for their well-being.
I think what's hard is that one of them is 14 years old, right?
So yeah, and wants to see his mom. Mm-hmm. You know, also side note, congrats to the dad for getting his life together. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, Rebecca, I think you're doing the right thing, in my honest opinion, and what I would do as far as the oldest wanting to see his mom. I think that should be his choice. That is his mom. But I think maybe you go along, or maybe dad goes along to supervise, just to make sure that nothing goes south and that he is safe.
Or maybe they have conversations about what the actual issue is. I'm not sure if that has happened yet.
Do you know what? First, I'll be open and say I don't feel qualified.
This
is like
we're not
heavy
certified.
Stuff.
I mean, I'm just saying my personal opinion.
Totally. This is a really heavy question, right? Where, mm-hmm. and I feel like if I were her, I would want to consult with a child psychologist. A professional she could tell all the details of what's going on. What his state of mind is. Like, there's a lot of moving parts here, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can he handle seeing his mom? Will it be worse? You know, I had a situation where when my second brother got killed in a car accident, my sister-in-law wanted me to go help her identify him at the morgue, and I just couldn't. I had just, 3 months earlier, found my brother dead, my other brother. Sorry to drop this into the oh my god zone, but I couldn't do it. But she wanted to take the kids, and I said that's not a good idea, but they want to go and they were young, and I told her, I said, it's not a good idea. It's up to you to be the adult right now and do the right thing. I get it, they want to see their dad one more time, but that's not the way to see them. Anyways, I shouldn't talk too much about this, other than I think that professional guidance from a mm-hmm. child psychologist that can actually meet the boy, they could give you probably a lot better guidance on this.
A trauma specialist. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of moving parts to that. So, no, I agree with you, AJ. It's like she's done a great job protecting the kid, you know, and now sooner or later they're going to want to meet their mom. But beyond that,
under the right circumstances.
But you're doing great so far, Rebecca. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your question, Rebecca. And as always, guys, please keep sending us questions through our email. And we definitely want to thank our amazing guest, Mark Malkin.
Mark was amazing. Amazing.
Thank you. So good, Mark. So good. And did you guys miss me, boys, or what?
No. That's not even, that's an understatement. That's an understatement.
I missed you guys so much.
Literally, we're like, we just sat here and stared at each other.
Yeah, basically. You know.
No, I heard you guys have fun. You're like, Renee was like, now that we've got no one looking over our shoulder,
unsupervised.
I heard you. Unsupervised. There you go.
We were unsupervised, yes.
Yeah, you were.
No adult supervision.
You and your bromance. Yeah.
Yes, we do have a bit of a bromance. It's fine. So listen, everybody, stay tuned for the next episode here on iHeartRadio with Pretty Messed Up. Y'all stay safe out there, and we will see and talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening.
Bye, guys.
Follow Pretty Messed Up on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.